chapter 11 of Agaris Achua, which can be found on page 379 and 380. Chapter 10, he proposed that he's talking about the relationship between Tshuva Ilah and Tshuva Titah, the higher level of Tshuva and the lower level of Teshuva. And he said, he brought in the idea of davening as being a part and facilitating it, and asked the question. It says that we learn in chapter 7 that Tshuva Titah is hachna'as halev, a feeling of humility, of dejection, of going through one's deeds. And Tshuva Ilah is an expression of simchas. It says, Ein mispalel ela mitoch simcha. You can only daven when you're happy. And he said not everybody can switch from one to the other right away. And he suggested that a person should say, for example, do the hachna'a part, the lower level of tshuva, he should be doing by tikkun chatzos. And we amended that to say by Kriya Shema Amita, since we don't say tikkun chatzos anymore. Okay. And leave the davening, you'll be happy.
So, in the times of the Alter Rebbe, they were still doing Tikkun.
They were doing Tikkun Chatzos up until like World War II, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah. There were people in Australia that were still doing Tikkun Chatzos. These guys that came off the boats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why don't we? Why did we stop?
You're more than welcome to continue.
No, I don't believe I'm on such a level. But whatever. Maybe I'm just lazy.
That's the reason why we don't do it, because
timing is odd.
We really don't.
It was decided as a movement, or it was just decided on an individual level. Just wasn't done.
People stopped doing it because they felt that they were not on the level of waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning and mourning the destruction of the temple with any type of earnestness.
Uh-huh.
Okay, even the guys that did it in Australia. So they did it just because that's what they were raised to do. But they didn't feel that there was a loss of any temple or anything like that. So.
Uh-huh.
So we're not doing it. So we replace it with
Yuma. I feel it more because you feel like, wow, there's
okay, you know, fine,
but not,
yeah,
I
but
don't,
not enough to get
I
you.
Don't want to give it
not enough to get you up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No,
and then to learn all, learn until dawn afterwards. Yes,
that's
and then to go to
Davin.
Yes, okay, and then work all day.
Yeah.
Okay, and be asleep by 8 o'clock. Yeah. So
it's hard.
We don't do that. No. Okay. The Amnam. Now, it's going to be very interesting. I did not know this. That when the Alter Rebbe starts a chapter, I don't know how many there are that start Amnam, he's introducing a Chiddush. This is something heretofore you would not have thought about had it not be that the Alter Rebbe introduced this concept.
Really?
Yes. Okay. So I'm just trying to think. I don't know Tanya well enough that I should. I don't know any other chapter that starts Amnam, but there might be, because this is the rule that was given that when an alter rebbe starts Amnam, so it means that this is a chiddush and we're answering something from the previous deal. Because what was the we had a problem last time is how are we going to do Tshuva Ilah and Tshuva Titah, and because he calls himself this orphan generation. And we can't go flipping emotions so fast.
He's speaking his generation. It's amazing.
Yes. Amnamli he is beliba hachna huba bechina shuva tatak and alvagam besimcha b'Hashem shteyem biyachad. He said, now we're going to have a chiddush. Okay. In the previous chapter, we said that a person should first do the humility and going through one's deeds and doing the tshuva tatah. And then doing the simcha, which is the expression of tshuva ilah. Here what he wants to propose is that you can do the two together. Which is not even what he was saying, why you should do it one at this time, one at that time, because you have the two different mishnayos. That one says, Ein mispalel ela mitoch kavod hadreish, and one mishnah says, Ein mispalel ela mitoch simcha. You only daven out of a heavy head. The other one says you only daven simcha. So that seems like to imply that you have to do one and then the other. So what the Alter Rebbe wants to propose in chapter 11 is that they simultaneously exist. And that this is not for a tzaddik. This is not for Ratzadik, right, even though he said that Shuvah Ilah is related to Ava Ilah, Ava Rabbah, which Ava Rabbah, he says, is a gift from above, right, and not everybody's zeichet to it. Mm-hmm. But here, what he's talking about now, and in Shuvah, when he's talking in Geras HaTshuvah, this is shayach to everybody. Hmm. Okay? Because everybody's shayach to get closer to Hashem. And he says, so what he wants to say is that the Tshuva Tata, and which is an expression of downcastness, and the Tshuva Ilah, the expression of Simcha, are both simultaneously occurring. How? Ukvar milsa amru lakutu amar se perek lamed dalet. Now what he's going to do now is he's going to pretty much verbatim quote chapter 34. He said, we already talked about this. Okay? The difference being that in chapter 34, he was approaching it not as a person, not at the level of a Baal Tshuva. He was approaching it as for the person who's a Beinoni. Because after the first section, the first section of Tanya is called Sefer Shel Beinoni.
Right.
And if you're up to chapter 34 already,
by then you're a Beinoni.
By then, you know, listen, you got it all. You got it down pat. You got the short way. You got the long way.
Yeah, sure.
You've already gone through all of the different things with depression. You got that out of the way. You've already had chapter 33 talking about Emunah. Now chapter 34, he's already wrapping up that whole section. Uh-huh. And 35 to the end, talk about mitzvahs and love and fear of Hashem. Uh-huh. Those are ancillary, but that's not how to be a Beinoni. That's what a Beinoni does. So if you're up to chapter 34 already in Tanya, so you should be able to be a Beinoni.
Pretty close to being.
Okay.
Right.
So, but here he's talking about Baal Tshuva. Mm-hmm. Okay. And even though he wants to say that the Iker Tshuva is not from Chet, but between you and me, most people are doing Tshuva because of things they did wrong. Okay. Even though we have, he said it many times. That you don't have to do something wrong to do tshuva.
Of course not.
But, for the most part, people are doing tshuva from things that they did wrong. So that's what he says in Perek Lamed Dalet. Now, so what does he say? Oh, come, and then it's interesting because he puts it, a period there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Generally speaking, I don't think that the periods were necessary, those of the Alter Rebbe.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not sure because in Hebrew generally, and there's no, and we're talking like classic Hebrew stuff like this.
No punctuation.
There's no punctuation at all.
No punctuation. Right.
You're lucky you get a colon every once in a while, maybe a new paragraph.
Right.
Okay.
Sure, right.
But the way that this was typeset, there's no paragraphing whatsoever.
Right.
Okay. So, but here he says it. Listen, if you really go, he says, go look at chapter 34. And if you get for homework, for your homework, go back and you can listen to the tapes of the recordings of 34.
Okay.
Okay. Kamosha Kazab Zohar. Now, what does it say in the Zohar? And again, he only quotes part of what he quotes before, because before he's talking to a Baal Tshuva. And here he's talking about. There he's talking about a Bain. And here he's talking about Tshuva. Kamosha Chadva Tikaya Baliba Sitra Da, etc. It says, what does it say in the Zohar? It says that Hachna'a. Downcastness is in one part of the heart, and simcha is in the other part of the heart.
Right.
So how is it now that a person is going to be able to be downcast and happy simultaneously? Is going to fit kind of sort of the same answer since he's bringing song 34 comes in conjunction with chapter 32. In chapter 32, he asks the question, how can you hate somebody and love somebody? You have a person who's a sinner, and you've rebuked him even 100 times, and he's still doing his sin. So now you have a mitzvah to hate them, but you never have the, you never lost the mitzvah of ahavta l'reacha kamocha. You have to love him as yourself. So how is it that you hate him and love him simultaneously? You hate the ra shebetoichai and you love the good, the tov shebetoichai. That which is the fact that's causing him to sin that you hate, but essentially he's a good person.
Right.
So now when you're talking about on this side of the heart is this and this side of the heart is that, what do we know about two sides of the heart? We learned way back when in chapter 9 that the right side of the heart is where the Nefesh Elokis is, and the left side of the heart is where the Nefesh Bahamas is. So the Nefesh Elokis in and of itself doesn't need to do tshuva.
Right.
Okay, the Neferchelukis, if it was totally and completely left alone, it would be fine. Yeah. I'm good. I'm happy. I'm a chelik elikai v'mal mamish. I'm a portion of God. I'm infinite. I look like God if you could draw a picture of me. I'm totally and completely attached to God because we have this thing called Yechidah Benefesh that a Nefesh of Bahamas does not have. That what's the Yechidah Benefesh is the spark of godliness which is connected to the spark of Creator.
Hmm.
It's a couple link between our soul and the infiniteness of Hashem. And that never goes away. It's always there. And as far as the godly soul is concerned, I'm good. I'm fine.
Mm.
Okay? And that's where your simcha is coming from. It's from the right side of the heart. The animal soul. The animal soul has a nefesh, ruach, neshama, and a chaya.
Mm.
It doesn't have a yechida. Okay? It's not totally tied into elikus.
Right.
Okay? Because if it was, it'd be a nefesh elikis.
Yeah, couldn't, right.
Okay, it's an, that's, you know, and that's why after a person 120 years old, what happens to the nefesh of Bahamas? It dissipates. It just disappears. It doesn't, we don't care, actually, what happens to it. It just it dissolves. Whatever happens to it, it goes back to its source from whence it came, as though it never existed.
Right.
That's enough because it's there as a function. It's basically to allow the godly soul to relate to a world. That's the only reason why we have a nefesh of Bahamas, and that we should be able to have the free choice to do what we're supposed to be doing in this world without the expression is Nahama Diksufa, the bread of shame.
Right.
That we should have what to do. We should have work to do.
Mm.
Okay, you with me?
Try it. This is the animal
What's the problem?
Soul.
Yeah, the animal soul. You've heard of the animal soul.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think. Okay. It has nothing to do with the end of our lives. Maybe.
After 120, it's
that.
Not there anymore.
I'm trying to think in the whole time of it's
because
there.
It's not the whole purpose of creation is not for animal soul.
Our animal soul there is to.
Our animal soul is there to give our nefesh elokis what to do.
The capacity to function here.
Yep.
Right, it's not the Yetzirah, it's the,
no.
It's the animal soul.
No, if you didn't have an animal soul, you wouldn't get out of bed.
You couldn't do a mitzvah.
You couldn't live. You couldn't live.
It powers the body.
Yeah. Okay, now it just so happens it has its own chai, which means it has its own ratzayim. Which means it wants to go one way. And you never shall keep saying, no, I don't think so.
It could do it.
That's what, that's the situation with chol levavecha, with all your heart. That means even your animal pleasures as well. Okay, so it's the pursuit of the animal pleasures in the mimer from this year that is being studied for Basil Ligani.
Mm.
So the Rebbe in Tavshin Yud Dalid, which was 20 years after, it was 4 years after Tavshin, after it was the fourth chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And there he's discussing the aspect of Shtus the Kedusha.
Yes.
Is what the whole thing over there is. I'm not going to go into Shtus HaKedusha so much, but he says that how does a person come to do an avera? Where does the ruach shtus enter into a person? The person just doesn't wake up one day and is possessed by a ruach shtus.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. He says, well, how does it work? Is a person has a geschmack in the physical world.
Right.
Okay? It doesn't even mean that he's acting on the geschmack.
Nope, just has it.
He has a geschmack in this. And the geschmack that he has for a physical thing takes away from the geschmack in Kedusha. Because a person's geschmack in Kedusha, as geschmack in Olam Hazeh, you know what geschmack means, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so the person has the word geschmack comes from the word to taste it, like it tastes good.
Yeah.
It's, okay, so the person has a desire for the for the physical pleasures of the world that's inversely related to his pleasures in the for holiness.
Right.
So this person has, so he's following after his pleasures, and what happens is he might give into it, if you can imagine such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do? Is now that he's involved with the geschmack, so it pushes him further.
Right.
And once a person's leaning, so it pushes him further into the pleasures until finally it pushes him into to do something wrong.
Right.
that's how the Roshtus comes into the person. It's a slow process.
Yes. Slow, steady pressure.
Yeah, and that's what the Yetzer Hara is, because the Yetzer Hara knows, is I'm just going to wake up tomorrow and say, eat pork, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Because my Yetzer Hara is not, my animal soul is going to say, no. My animal soul is going to say, no.
Right, correct. Wow. Even the animal soul would say no.
Yeah, even the animal soul would say, no, I'm not going to eat pork tomorrow.
Right.
There's no pleasure in...
Right. So but it's a slow process by which the person gets pushed lower to lower to lower to lower till finally what happens, the person thinks, well, what point does it become, like, where did he cross the line? On this side of the line, it's still okay, but this is just like with the next step. So, so he just thinks, listen, I'm still Jewish over here.
I'm pushing the line.
I'm still Jewish over here. So if I go a little further, I'll still be Jewish. I'm still fine.
There's a reason not to move the fence.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't move the landmarks.
So we're surrounded by others that don't do anything, that do it.
Yeah, so it's very interesting because we talked a lot in this, in the earlier chapters about chapter four, that our connection to Hashem is like a rope.
Right.
And so he says, so how is it that a person who's involved, the kol davar oser, this person is shakua, the word shakua means sunk into the pleasures of the world, has lost his desires to engage in
spirituality.
Right. And then even to the point where he's going to deny in spirituality. Ooh. And then what happens is he gets hit between the eyes with a test of emunah. Mm. And he passes it. The emunah part, he's not giving up. So this is why. So he says, the Rebbe says, is because the rope is made of 613 strands.
Right.
And so each mitzvah that a person transgresses, it's only one strand.
Right.
So the Ruach just says, only one strand. You still got 612.
Right.
So go do this one. What's your batting average? 612 out of 613.
It's pretty heavy.
That's a pretty high,
That's a Yetzer Hara.
If you took a major test and got 612 out of 613, you would be very happy. Right. This is what your Yetzer Hara tells you. Just do, 612. That's still good. You're still good. Now do 611.
Yeah.
The fee is 611 still really was 612, wasn't it?
600 out of 2.
Yeah,
are
sure.
You kidding me? Come
okay.
On. 550.
So, but when it comes to cutting the rope, it's nope.
Right.
I'm not cutting the rope. That's the whole deal.
Yeah.
I'm going to lose everything for that. No, can't do that.
The lowest of the low will not.
That's right. Even a coffee will come out. Correct. That even a person who is sunk in taivas and sitra achar, etc., will stand up to the test of amunah.
Yeah.
Because that really hits on the connection that they have. The Rosh Tus just doesn't get that. Is not all encompassing. It's not that strong. And because it can't hit the yechida, because what we're saying then at that point is the person should unplug their connection to God, and the Nefesh HaElokis just says, no, I can't do it. I cannot do it, because you can't do it. We've talked about this before, that a Jew, as much as they may want to, cannot become Jewish. Cannot become not Jewish. He cannot become not Jewish.
Exactly.
Okay?
Right.
So when we're talking now that you have, so you have Elokus on one side, which is the Simcha, and you have the Nefesh HaBahamas on the other side, that's the Hachna. Because what's the easiest thing to do with one's Nefesh HaBahamas? You basically step on it so that it can't move. Put a yoke on it, if it's a big enough behemoth. But otherwise, if you just do that, if you just like put a leash on it, at least.
Yeah.
So that way you'd be able to lead it around. At least then you got it under control. So he says something that he said, Chedva tekiya beliba de sitra da v'chulu. That desire or love is lodged, joy is lodged in one side of the heart, and the et cetera is, and the humility is lodged in the other side of the heart. And together with this is the faith and the surety that it, there's planted in his heart, ki chafes chesed su, that Hashem desires kindness, v'chanan v'rachum v'rav lislayach, and that Hashem desires good, and he's gracious, and he's merciful, and he's abundant to forgive. Okay, that's based, that's really, that's the...
Can you explain the difference between grace and mercy in this case?
Probably not.
Fair enough. I mean, I in truth, I've been trying to get an answer to that question for a long time, and I haven't found anybody yet who can give me a good answer on that.
I thought I had one, but it's not good. But he'll improve on it, I'm sure.
Okay, the Tzemach Tzedek writes that the difference between rachum and chanun is that rachum, which is an expression of yud gimel midas harachamim, which is, we talked about that in previous chapters,
right,
as that which fills in all of the dents and the gaps caused by the shortcomings of a person who needs to do tshuva.
Right.
So that's an expression of mercy.
Yes.
That is there for a person, he says, is when a person is going to do tshuva immediately.
Okay.
So Hashem will have rachmanis on them.
Okay.
What happens? You have a person did something wrong,
right,
and he's not doing tshuva so fast.
Uh-huh.
So how's this person supposed to continue on? This person still needs life, and Hashem's still cutting them slack. It's not even coming from the Isurus of the Latata, the person coming and saying, hey, I need to do tshuva, and then keep drawing down the rachamim.
Right.
The chanun is an expression of a higher level of elikus, also the same vein, also coming from Teferis,
right,
that is there even for the person who's not doing tshuva. Okay? So that's the difference between chanun and rachamim.
Wow. Harl got a lot of it.
Wow.
Indeed. Okay.
Wow. So there it is. Wow.
Yep.
And then
very good.
Right. And that's why it is that Hashem is Rav Lislayach, because there's all these different media by which all the gaps can be filled in.
And obviously every person's at a different, probably at different levels.
Of course.
There's
going to be different permutations, sure.
Different as you say, permutations in every aspect of his life.
Correct.
Levels of tshuva. Sheesh, yeah. Wow. That's
okay.
It's incredible. Gee.
As it says, Kirev rachamecha mechei pashoi. With your abundant mercy, you erase negligence. Kabseni tahareni v'kol avanaseni macha. And wash me, purify me, and wipe away all of my sins. These are pesukim that are an expression of both chanun and rachum. This is all from Tillim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tillim, chapter 51. We say it every night before we go to sleep. Belishim safek usveik seka ba'olam. That for sure we know. This is, so where is the simcha coming from? That I know Hashem is quick and abundant to forgive, and even more than that, because we're talking tshuva love here. Simcha is tshuva love. And even more than that. And that my relationship with Hashem is solid. It's interesting, without a doubt, this is a normal Talmudic expression. Belishum safik usveik sveika klal. Without any doubt, or without even a shadow of a doubt. What's a sveik sveika? There's a whole chapter in Shulchan Aruch, in Teruvus, that deals with what to do with a sveik sveika. Generally we say, if you have a suffix, then throw it out.
Okay.
That's generally the rule. If it's suffix deraisa, and you're talking laws of kosher, for the most part, so you gotta get rid of it.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what happens if you don't know a couple of things? Like, for example, you have 10 boxes.
Right.
Okay. In 9 of the boxes is matzah.
Right.
One of the boxes has chametz.
Okay.
Okay. Now we're not talking 9 boxes of matzah and 1 box of bread.
Right.
That would be obvious. But you have, I have a box sitting on the shelf that says, this matzah is not for Passover use.
Right, okay.
Okay, it looks like matzah to me, but it's chametz.
Right.
Okay? So I got nine boxes of matzah and one box of chametz. Mm. And one box disappears.
Okay.
Okay? So now, what do I do? It's Pesach. Mm. So, or before Pesach. So we say that since it's nine of them there, so we go, that's not, wait, this is not six, that's more
Aruba.
That's Parshman Aruba. We'll stop, let me stop it. I'll back up a second, that's the wrong example. And so they're all in the same area, okay? The suffix is, the way that the general formula for Sveik Sveika is there's a possibility it could have been this, and even if it was that, I don't know if it really was.
Okay.
Okay? Here's an example of Sveik Sveika. Huh. Like, for example, a person buys meat from a butcher shop.
Yes.
And there's nine butcher shops that are kosher and one that's treif. Mm-hmm. So that we said that if you, that meat would be treif. But however, let's say that he had nine pieces of meat, mm-hmm. and he didn't know from which butcher shop they came from.
Right.
And he ate one of them.
Right.
So now it's a suffix. Did it come from this butcher shop? And suffix, was this meat not kosher or not?
Right.
That would be like, for an example, mm-hmm. sikfika. Okay. So it says it means a doubt, and it's usually translated as you have something called without a shadow of a doubt,
uh-huh.
is the English expression.
Right.
Okay, without a shadow, what's a shadow? A shadow is not, it has the same outline, the same shape, but it's
there, but you can't, it's
one generation removed.
Yes.
And there really isn't any substance to the shadow.
Right, there's no substance.
Okay, but still, even still, it's of a doubt. Okay, so if a person got a shadow, I don't doubt you, but I have a shadow of a doubt. I mean, it's still in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
There's question. Something there. So here what it is this person's really, really, really happy. Why is he really, really, really happy? Is because he knows that his relationship with Hashem is constant and is a really solid, terrific thing. Without any doubt whatsoever.
Okay.
So that's where his happiness is coming from. Mm-hmm. Wow. Like we say every day, three times a day in davening, we ask Hashem, please forgive us. And we conclude, he said this is all quoted from chapter 34.
Right.
And we conclude, blessed are you, Hashem, who is gracious and abundant to forgive. So if we had a doubt that Hashem was going to forgive us, so then you wouldn't be able to say that bracha.
So here's the question: Why are we using gracious in this term when we previously defined it as something I'm not doing tshuva on?
Who says you're going to do tshuva just because you're saying?
Ah, okay. Just because you're saying the words doesn't necessarily mean you...
Hashem is chanun. But that doesn't mean that you are.
You've done. Yeah. Just because you said the words doesn't necessarily mean you've done tshuva.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Cool.
Okay. Hayisakel b'rachel l'hakel. It should be. Since the Shemana Esrei is midr rabbanan.
Right.
And if you have a doubt if you should say a bracha or not.
Right.
Because they're only midr rabbanan. Okay, you had a cup of tea, and you don't remember if you said a shahakal or not.
Right.
And you're really trying to think, listen, I'm sipping the thing. Did I say shahakal already or not? You wouldn't say shahakal.
Right.
Because safek bracha is lahakal.
Right.
Because here it is, I'm saying Hashem is going to forgive me. This is a bracha midrabbanan. So therefore, we must be concluding, Mishum chashash bracha levatala. You would think maybe we have some kind of suspect or worry that this would be a bracha levatala. Maybe Hashem is not forgiving me so fast.
So here's the grace.
Ela ain kan shum safik klal me acha shir bikshana salach launa moichel launa. But here, there's no doubt whatsoever that as soon as we ask from Hashem, please forgive us, Hashem forgives us. And if it weren't be the fact that we right away, we go away and we do something wrong immediately in the middle of Shemayna Esrei, Because what's the bracha right immediately after Slach Lanu? Is Gaal Yisrael. How come it is when I say Baruch Atah Hashem Gaal Yisrael, we're not redeemed immediately? Mm-hmm. And the reason is because we, by the time that we got it ready to Gaal Yisrael, oh, who knows what went through our mind already. So he says, that this is true even with, you don't have to be God to do this one. He says, watch. There's a law, a halacha, that if someone comes to you and says, I am sorry, please forgive me,
right,
you must forgive them.
Right.
And forgiving means totally and completely letting go, that you feel no animosity to this person at all.
That's a tough halacha.
Yeah. Yeah, and you have to the point. And not to be stubborn from forgiving, even if the person cut off his hand. The Gambikish, I'll talk about this in a second. The Gambikish Shemena, Gimel Pamim Loi Moichel Loi Shuvain Sarek Levaka Shemena. And if a person comes and asks forgiveness three times, he doesn't have to ask anymore. Because now the problem's with the
individual.
With the other guy. The problem's not that I did something wrong. The problem's not with you, that you're not forgiving me. That's where the problem now comes. Okay? But this is an interesting thing. That in Judaism, because we relate to each other, the etzem of my nefesh to the etzem of your nefesh. So if a person cuts off somebody's hand, that wasn't his nefesh elokis.
No.
That was his nefesh of Bahamas that did it.
Right.
So now what happens is he feels remorse. He feels sorry about it, meaning his nefesh elokis is kicked into action and says, hey, you better straighten things up over here. You have to go make amends. Because Yom Kippur is not going to help the fact that he cut off somebody's hand.
Right.
He has to go and appease the person. Doesn't mean you have to be best buddies with the guy and play cards with him, especially if the guy's only got one hand. It's kind of hard.
Tough, yeah.
You know, so. You dealt him a good hand. Yes. Anyway, so the he's he is. It's
late.
Because he's relating to on a soul level, it is like, well, of course, I am not going to, and this is something that people really have to learn. This is like a very important thing that people have to learn about interpersonal love, because people get slighted all the time.
Sure.
Okay, whether people know about it, whether they don't know about it, whether it's a small thing, whether it's a large thing,
yeah.
People get stuff done to them,
right,
by other people.
Right.
All the time.
Right.
And then what's going to happen is a person's going to be all tied up in knots about it.
Mm. Yeah.
It says, before Yom Kippur, many people have a custom of going around to old people and asking, please, if I did anything wrong to you this year, please forgive me. Okay? In Lubavitch, we don't do it. Why? Because we assume that you forgave me already.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In fact, I know this happened, I don't know how long, a couple of years ago. Okay? A guy went and asked the Lubavitcher before Yom Kippur, if I did anything wrong this year, could you please forgive me? So the guy, the Lubavitcher said to him, yeah, only if you tell me what you did wrong to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he was joking. But then the guy started telling him. And now the guy got mad at him.
Oh, yeah.
So you did what?
Oh, yeah.
It's better not to open your mouth. Yeah. So, but, because we assume that the person is going to forgive him.
Mm.
The person is going to forgive me if I slighted that person wrong. There's no point in me asking. There's no need for me to ask that person, please forgive me.
Mm.
Because we assume that the person is going to, because that's the normal thing to do, because otherwise what happens is that he eats me up. And I don't want to get eaten up. So it's called letting go.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it would annoy me if someone didn't have a clue, really did upset me, or he did something really wrong and had no idea that they even did it.
I think there's an expression in AA, let go, let God.
Oh, yeah.
You heard that expression?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
I have
to emulate a sin, we have to be like him. He,
right.
Doing this very difficult man.
That means basically, believe in Hashgacha Pratis. It happened. No, this person's only supposed to have one hand for the rest of his life. Okay. Okay, that doesn't mean that you can't sue the guy.
Yeah.
I forgive you, but here's my paper.
Yeah, yeah. I see the guy, but I'm serving your papers, yes. So I feel no ill will. Listen, it's divine providence.
Well,
I'm supposed to this
not
happen to me.
Anymore.
But, you know, guess who's garnishing your wages for the rest of your life? Yes. Okay. Such is the point now. This person has come and asked three times. Three times establishes credulity. It's called chazaka. Mm-hmm. This means that if the person is asking three times and he's not forgiven, that's an indication that there is something highly wrong with the person from whom forgiveness is being asked.
Mm.
And it is, there appears in the Gemara at this point, it was taken out in the European editions, about a story involving Yozel.
Mm-hmm.
That what happened, Yozel was a student of, I can't think of the name, he was in an elite academy, okay, with an elite Rosh Hashiva. And they're traveling from point A to point B, and they stayed overnight in an inn, a wayside inn, which is what people did.
Mm.
And the rabbi, the Rosh Yeshiva, commented at the dinner table, isn't our hostess such a beautiful woman?
Mm-hmm.
And Yozel responded, the Rebbe, she's cross-eyed. And the Rebbe kind of did like a double take and said, I was referring to her graciousness as a host, not about her physical beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could think that I was referring to her physical beauty, then you don't belong in this yeshiva. Mm-hmm. I'm kicking you out. Okay, you kicked them out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, while went by, and he came and he went, and Yozel asked forgiveness of the rabbi and said, please forgive me, let me back in. He said, no, I'm not. And he came back a second time. And again he said, no, I'm not. Okay. The third time, he was already planning he was going to let him back in. But when Yozel came, the rabbi was in the middle of saying Shema, and he couldn't talk. So he made like a hand gesture, which was kind of like the symbol, wait one second. And Yozel took it and interpreted it to mean, get out.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it says that he walked out of the Beis Medrash and he bowed down to a rock and he said, Zekeli van Veyu, this is my God and I'll glorify him. And from there on, he went on a campaign against the corruption of the rabbinate.
Mm.
Okay, and the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Okay. So he says, so the Gemara says over there, don't be a hard nose. You want to teach a guy a lesson? Don't be a hard nose. Don't push it to the third time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If he would have just said after the first time, would have said, well, okay.
Yeah.
Or maybe the second time. You want to teach him the second time, let him in. Okay? Don't wait to the third.
Yeah, don't. Yeah.
V'hagivonim. Shabikis David HaMelech Olav HaShalom Mehem Mechila Ba'ad Shoel Shehemis Es HaGivayim V'loi Rasa L'Meichel Gozer David Aleim Shalom Yaviv V'Kahal HaShem Shem Rachmanim V'Kulu Ki the Isa V'Soy Perek Ches D'Yavamas. And you have, for example, you have the Givayim. Who were the Givayim? The Givayim were a tribe of Jebusites who put on a whole show during the time of Joshua, and they put on old clothes and worn shoes covered in dust, and they made themselves look like they were coming from a very far place, and they made a treaty with David with Yeshua of non-aggression, mm-hmm. and that they would take care of each other. Okay, then came out, the whole thing was a hag. These were Jebusites, Yevusim, and Yehoshua was commanded to wipe out the Yevusim. He was part of the Canaanite nations. But he made already a pact with his tribe, so he said, okay, fine. You guys are going to be wood choppers and water carriers. You're going to be the janitors in the Mishkan.
Right.
It's a good job.
But they got taken care of. Okay? So what happened? Shaul got mad at David because David asked of the Urim V'Tumim, and the Kohen Gadol gave David Goliath's sword. And so Shaul went and killed 300 Kohanim and 7 Givinim, or 8 Givinim. And the Givinim now, so what happens is now there's a famine, there's a plague. Children are dying every single day. And David went to Nathan and Avi and said, what's going on over here? How come people are dying? Kids are dying. And they said, because the Givinim are upset that Shaul killed their relatives. So he went to the Givinim and said, what do you want? What's going to appease you? And he said, they said, we want people, the number of Shaul's relatives should be killed, the number that he killed. We want you know, life for life. Mm. And David HaMelech said, went back to Nathan and said, this is absurd. He says, the plague is going to continue until you appease them. So he tried to appease them again. And he said, they wouldn't take anything. This is the only thing they would take. So he actually turned over relatives. And then he decreed that you're not allowed to marry a Givonite because a Jew is merciful,
right,
humble, and likes to do good deeds.
Right.
And that if somebody could perpetrate such a thing like this, even though they might be justified for it,
doesn't matter.
You got to give it up. They're not Jewish. To be continued, we got to the first word in the line is "Ubaminas Hakadosh Baruch Hu Alachas Kamet Lein Case." And what about God? If this is with us, then for sure by God. To be continued.
Wow. Very good.